Hello and welcome to Chic Show. It's Sunday, the 15th of April, and this is Barbara Kennelly, your hostess, coming to you live from New York as I do every Saturday and Sunday at noon Eastern Time. As you know, I'm the author of chic books filled with Italian passion and a travel writer specializing in the charm, beauty, magic, and secrets of Italy. For more information about my books and to download your chic free Italian gift, please go to my website, barbaracanelli.com, and the link is also on the show page. I'm very excited about today's show. My guest today is Esther Ross, who is going to talk about her book, Fast Track for Caregivers. We have a call-in number that is 760-888-5769. So if you have any questions, you can call in. Our chat room is open, so if you want to chat with us, just click on the little green icon next to the show, and you can ask us questions online, because I think this is a very important topic. So, Esther Ross, drawing on more than 40 years of experience as a certified teacher, certified advocate, tutor, resource, and referral specialist, Esther wrote this book, Fast Track for Caregivers, to help others avoid the pitfalls she faced when thrust into the role of caregiver. She has worked extensively with parents, agencies, schools, hospitals, and students, and appearances on both television and radio, as well as contributions to magazines and newspapers, have served to further hone her skills. Esther has had the opportunity to train parents, students, families, and professionals with practical advice to help themselves and loved ones. She also serves as Special Services Director for a local private school, and she has been honored many times for her volunteer work within the communities and has been named an exemplary worker in the state of New Hampshire, and she has also been named to the Board of Directors for World Academy in Nashua. Okay. So now let's talk to Esther and let's find out more about her wonderful book. Hello, Esther. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for the honor to be with you and your listeners today. I'm very happy about that, so that I can share information on to those who would become caregivers or who are considering it or who are already doing it now. And I'd like to thank them for their care.
Thank you very much. You know, I think this caregiving issue is very important. I've been able, well, I had to in my life experience it personally when I became a caregiver in my family environment, and I absolutely wasn't ready for it. I had no information. I had no resources. I didn't know where to turn, you know. It was very difficult. It happened 3 times. Every single time it was a little bit different. And I know how important it is to have support in this situation, because I think it can be very hard emotionally, mentally, physically even. So can you tell us more about your book and about how it actually helps people in such situations?
I'd be delighted to. First, I'd like to say that caregivers are happening more often because people are living longer, because health costs have risen, and because families need to assume a greater role than ever before, given the complexity of medical science treatment, the administration of medications, and various therapies. Our book describes in great detail early considerations before you assume the task of becoming a caregiver. Later on in the book, we talk about in-home care, outpatient care, patients in facilities, and we give a great deal of resource information that is all free, many websites, and other people to contact so that you don't have to take that journey alone. When my mom fell and hurt herself, she needed to move in with us, And I found out that not even a social worker had been assigned to help in the transition from Massachusetts to New Hampshire. So not having knowledge of elder services even here, as my career largely dealt with children and young adults with handicapping conditions, I had to go on a chase. I look forward to the fact that those reading this book will not have to do that. It's time-consuming. It can be a financial burden if you don't know how to negotiate yourself through the system and save yourself costs. The book also talks about mental health support for the patient and the caregiver, emergency responses, safety devices needed, for instance, at home or in facilities, and many topics about the paperwork legally that needs to be in place so that one can be a successful caregiver. Many families don't recognize the fact that those paperworks need to be operative, whether you take a patient to the hospital and need to find out information about them or give information to them, things like that. So, Barbara, I think the important thing is the book is easily readable. It's written for people from all walks of life. We've even had the medical community tell us that they've learned something, too, by reading it and looking through the resources and the website.
You know, this is really great because, as you said and as you mentioned, not even, you know, social workers, even if you are lucky and are able to work with a social worker, not even social workers actually sometimes are able to give you enough information, guide you, and really help you. So this is so important. Okay, so what do you think is the most important thing a caregiver in this situation needs to know?
I believe that the knowledge of your local community resources, what's available, such things, for instance, as adult daycare when you might be working or the patient needs more mental stimulation or more medical care, is certainly a service that is well hidden from many families. Those services can provide transportation for the patient, coverage under the patient's medical assistance programs or plans, mental and physical care in a very safe environment. I found that the knowledge of that was very skimpy in our state, although there were excellent programs available. So the knowledge of what your local resources can be a tremendous asset to families planning short-term and long-term care.
Yes. So so first, you know, really explore your options, explore your local resources, facilities, and community options, and so on. So let's say that we are a family and we are facing this situation when we know we're going to have to take care of a loved one. And there are several people who could become the main caregivers. You know, there could be children, grandchildren, you know, cousins. So how do we work it out? How do we discover who should be or should become the main caregiver? What qualities or what does this person need to have in place?
That's an excellent question, Barbara, and we're frequently asked that at our book signings and presentations at hospitals, agencies, churches, other institutions. In fact, even the medical community is now starting to have some classes for caregivers so that people can determine whether they are the best caregivers. First, I think you need to be in reasonably good health. I think you need to understand the patient's condition from the medical, financial, and social point of view. You may take a patient into your home and have homebound service providers. You need to know what is available. You need to know the insurance coverage or lack of coverage.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to have guidance on your physical situation. Can the home mm-hmm. provide a safe environment? Can it can the patient, if needing to be left alone, manage that time? Would you have other personnel available to assist you, because you may need to go to the dentist, you may need to go mm-hmm. to work, you may have your own emergency. It could be even an auto emergency and not be home when you need to be. So all of these things can be thought about when you read our book, Fast Track for Caregivers. I think the most important thing is to have a checklist of all of the needs of the patient first, whether that mm-hmm. would be transportation needs to outpatient care, such as physical therapy. Would there be financial needs where you might have to apply for some forms of elder assistance, or if the patient is younger, there are opportunities for assistance at that time? You might want to consider whether the patient should be on Social Security disability so that there are funds coming in which could assist the patient's needs and not have it dip into, for instance, your own financial status, which may prohibit adding on another person. The lawyers for especially elders and handicapped patients can meet with you for a nominal cost to consult and help you set up all the paperwork, a health care mm-hmm. proxy, a power of attorney so that you could go to the bank and take out money for that patient's care, so that you could speak with physicians and emergency personnel and make sure that you give the list of medications or the family history of that patient. So sometimes it's very wise, especially if the patient may own a home or property or have certain instruments such as stocks or pensions available mm-hmm. or even disability insurance, so that you know exactly what you can and cannot do in behalf of that patient. So that would be an excellent visitation, and many attorneys will provide more direction on what the proposed caregiver or the caregiver who's now doing it needs to do to protect that patient's finances, health, safety, and so forth. That's also true if the patient needs to go to a facility. There are groups yes. associated with lawyers that can help you select one that's competent, look up certain references about the institution, and help in the transition. In fact, the costs are nominal compared to the costs of making an error.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it means that a caregiver needs to have, you know, many things in place. It's the practical thing, which is the care itself, you know, taking care of the person, making sure I have the right space, making sure I have the right car, maybe making sure that I'm in touch with the right people, medication, and so on. Then there's also paperwork, which I think is very important. Many people forget about that, so thank you for mentioning, because it makes things so much easier if you take care of it. And as you say, errors can be very costly and very, very unpleasant. The consequences can be very tough. So, are there any other responsibilities that a caregiver needs to be aware of?
Yes, and I think on the personal level, sometimes it's very helpful for the caregiver or proposed caregiver to sit down with an outside professional and determine whether the caregiver has the appropriate training to mm-hmm. To be able to manage all of these multitasking items. Mm-hmm. Sometimes one needs an accountant, for instance, for a patient who has a complex financial situation. Sometimes there may be out-of-state issues. A patient needs to be transported to a major hospital in the city but lives in the suburbs. So all of these things can help relieve the stress on the caregiver if dealt with in advance. There are many state and governmental agencies that are listed in my book that can also assist with that. I think the most important thing is that the caregiver needs to look around at other members of the family or friends or people who have had a time with that patient in their lives to co-join with them to get certain things done. Some patients require such an extraordinary amount of care that it's physically impossible. There aren't enough man hours to get it all done by yourself. For instance, if you have a family member who's very good on the financial and you may not be as well-versed, you might want to designate that portion to be done to that member. If you have the appropriate paperwork in place, that can help the caregiver focus on the actual care and supporting the patient psychologically, having some moments of joy together, whether that's going to lunch if the patient is capable or doing some recreational things to make life enjoyable for all the people involved. So including others can sometimes be very helpful.
Yes, yes. I think it's very important to be able to ask for help and delegate so that we're not really left alone.
And I think that very often caregivers don't realize their degree of fatigue, lack of self-care, no vacation time. And so there are agencies, people, and volunteer organizations that can assist with making proper arrangements for that patient to be well served.
Yes.
One of the important things. One of the important things I don't want to neglect to tell your audience is this, that caregivers who do this around the clock for protracted periods may be subject to certain risks of their own health. So having a form of respite care to come into the house or the nursing home or the assisted facility is very, very important. And there are wonderful agencies, people, and especially volunteer organizations that can do that for several hours a month. So you can go for your medical care. You can go to the beach and sit under your umbrella for a few hours and have a perspective when you come home and a renewed energy. Very important.
It is. So make sure you're taken care of as well so that you don't burn out. I think it's this can be very dangerous because you can seriously burn out, right?
Yes, and sometimes what happens is the patient's condition may be changing or deteriorating for a time or permanently, and I think you have to recognize the fact that sometimes psychological supports for the caregiver, whether it be in the form of a therapist, a spiritual counselor, your clergy person, can really renew your spirits and give you the opportunity to have a perspective that you may not be able to have when you're there day to day through traumatic events, injuries, falls, medication difficulties. Some patients, especially elderly, don't tolerate a lot of medication well, and that has to be reviewed. So I think that it's vital that the family have some sort of mentorship while they do this job.
There is a situation that's very difficult, and I think many people face it sooner or later. Let's say that you're taking care of a loved one, and as you said, their state is really getting worse. And it becomes extremely difficult to take care of them at home. And now there's a question, should the person stay home or should we start looking for a facility? And I know there are lots of emotions around it because we want the best for the person, and we emotionally we are convinced that the best for the person is to be at home with their family. But sometimes it's just no longer possible. So how do we work it out? How do we make such a difficult decision? What do we need?
I think the important thing is to look at the degree of involvement of medicine and medical care that the patient needs. Some are well done by going to an adult daycare facility and being home at night and perhaps having the visiting nurses or another group come in to check on the patient, make the patient more comfortable. I think a professional assessment, as opposed to only the caregivers, on what the patient's needs will be short-term and long-term is very critical. There are people and agencies that do that in-home assessment. They'll watch the patient's safety medications, whether the patient is having difficulties coping or is medically, clinically depressed or needs more stimulation. Sometimes bringing a patient who is, as we say with the program, to various facilities to spend a little time, a half day, I did that with my mom, helps in the transition. The patient says, gee, this place is nice, they have activities, I like the nursing staff that I met, I'll go there. I think having to check with state agencies and ombudsmen that are free to the family about the type of facility is very important, whether they have had a need for correction, whether they've been cited for major flaws, whether they only specialize in dementia patients. Those are things that the family caregiver may not always be on to. So using those forms of assistance would help the family make a good decision. But I especially like the patient, if they're able to, making a visit, for instance, to a facility and seeing how they fit in with the other patients, the greeting, the warmth of the nursing staff, who is the medical physician, really a meet and greet. And some places have an open house for that around the country. I think that's a wonderful way for the patient to transition and not be frightened, and for the caregivers to have some real familiarity with what is going on around them.
Yes. So can we say that it's important to be maybe a little emotionally detached from the situation and really do what's best for the patient and for the condition? It's not really about our feelings of responsibility or a guilt or shame or whatever we may feel. It's really about being detached and being able to look at the situation and choose what's best for the other person when it comes to health care and so on.
Yes, and I think the other thing that I didn't quite recognize when I planned to keep Mom at home with us for to the end of life, the doctor took that decision away from me. You know, caregivers can be reported if they don't follow certain medical standards. For instance, if Mom wasn't safe or she needed 24-hour medical care that we could not obtain for her locally, then the doctor said she has to go to a facility. And if that's not done, it could put the caregiver in some kind of legal jeopardy as well. Doctors can report caregivers, it doesn't often happen, but if they violate a standard of safety for the patient, for instance, or the caregiver, even with great intentions, cannot provide some of those 24-hour services. So I think the important thing here to realize is that our good intentions are wonderful, and yes, we need to keep going with those, but we sometimes don't have 100% control over the patient's long-term well-being. And safety, for instance, would be a major issue on why a patient, for instance, with dementia may need to be in a facility may need to get certain care and be kept from leaving, harming themselves, things like that.
Yes.
So I think it's all about the whole community taking care of our loved ones.
Yes. So we have talked a lot about what responsibilities caregivers have, but I'm sure there is a certain point where the responsibilities end. So what is it like? When does it happen?
Well, if, for instance, a caregiver notes that the patient has gone downhill, is very fragile, and there is a possibility of coma or death, I think there are people who can help with planning for that patient, whether it be for hospice care, even hospice care in nursing homes, which a lot of people are not aware of, things like that, so that the whole case can be managed and everyone's needs are addressed. People can receive pastoral counseling through that mechanism, support, do some planning so that when the patient does pass on, things are in place. There's less paperwork. There's less difficulty. There have been plans for the all of the things that have to be wound down at the end. And there is a lot of paperwork, and there is a lot of appointments and things that have to be done. But I think the emotional support one can get from such organizations as hospice can be a wonderful blessing and help families get through it, particularly if there are young children and it's a grandparent and the children are, you know, upset, grandma doesn't recognize me, whatever. And those kinds of things are something to consider. It affects not just the caregiver, but the entire family, and even friends of the patient who may call you long after the patient is no longer with us and want to talk because they lost a friend as well. That's the one thing I never thought about after my mother passed away. Her friends were friends of 50 years or more. And so they kept calling me, and they kind of adopted me. And at first, I was so busy with all of the winding down that I didn't recognize the great value. They have wonderful stories to tell. They had great love for my mother. And to this day, I talk with many of them weekly or monthly, some who are scattered all over the country. And it's very comforting and a wonderful support.
Esther, this is wonderful information. So can we maybe sum it up a little bit and maybe say when you look for support, when you need support, whether it's medical, whether it's, you know, legal or in your community, what kinds of support services are out there at any stage of the caregiving process? What should we look for, or what can we count on, or what should we, you know, what should we ask for even? What's out there?
I think that going to your local hospitals and medical agencies, you can find courses and classes and patient classes, and so that you can receive your own education as a caregiver. You can even become certified as a caregiver, which brings the patient great comfort when you've been through the training. I think they show you things as emergency response, what is an emergency if you're taking care of that patient, outfitting the home for safety as we do in our book, and many resources that are local. So I strongly suggest that looking to the local agencies and especially hospitals can really make that journey less burdensome and can reduce your stress. That would be a very good first step. Now, the physicians can advise the families where to find some of that help, But oftentimes, hospital-based, there are social workers, even if one hadn't been assigned to the patient, who can provide actual sheets of references and resources, mm-hmm. reading material, questions to ask, that make the caregiver's journey a positive one.
This is fantastic. Esther, you've been such a great guest, but our time is almost up. So can you please tell us once again where people can find you online, where they can find your book, how they can get in touch with you if they maybe need assistance, if they have questions?
Absolutely. The book is called Fast Track for Caregivers. It's a practical guide for managing care while preserving your sanity. The book is by Esther Ross and Joseph Ross. You can find it at www.rostrumpublishing.com. I'll spell that, R-O-S-S-T-R-U-M, www.rostrumpublishing.com. Or you can go to Amazon or any of the fine bookstores and Google Fast Track for Caregivers. You can contact us through the website, and we'd be very happy to assist you in any way we can or refer you to agencies or persons around the country who specialize in this aspect of caregiving. I would like to say to all those considering it or all those who are doing it or have done it that what you have offered the patient, even with limitations that you may have in knowledge or whatever, is great hope and joy for the times that they have. And that is something to be looked at over and above the work, the finances, the appointments, the caregiving. At the end of the day, this is a task worth doing for many, and it is a joy, and it's something that stays with you for all of your life. So I hope that your listeners will purchase the book and use it as a reference. It's something that we've been told can really be used over and over, and by the medical community, they thought that it was incredibly useful because it's quick and readable. You can even read it while you're waiting for the patient in the doctor's office and know the questions to ask of the medical personnel and of others.
Esther, thank you so much for being here with us today and for sharing your wealth of information and wisdom and experience, because we all know how important this topic is and how we, when we find ourselves in this difficult situation, how much we need all that information and connection. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Barbara, and thank you to your listening audience. I wish you all good health and joy.
Thank you so much, and thank you very much for listening to Chic Show today. I'll be back next week with new fantastic guests. This is Barbara Canelli wishing you a very chic Sunday. Goodbye.